Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Oh, dude.
I know.
Is that some optimism I sense in your voice?
It is a little optimism. I'm back. We had some technical difficulties last week. It was hard for me to post the podcast. I'm using a new program this week. It appears to be working. And today, as an extra gift, we get the news that the NHL has proposed a new deal to the Players Association. Part of it being contingent upon a full 82-game season starting no later than November 2nd. So, pretty exciting news. It's only been out in the interwebs and in the ether for a few hours yet, so we don't know all of the various details, but at first glance, it appears to be, some serious concessions seem to be made by the owners. You know, they asked for everything but the kitchen sink in their initial deal, so in comparison, this looks great. So the question is, are you excited? Are you optimistic? How are you feeling?
I feel numb and nothing yet because, first of all, I was a little irritated that if they were willing to do this in the first place, then why didn't they do this, you know, 6 weeks ago? That they should have made this offer in good faith instead of having there be any lockout period, because obviously they had a game plan and this is, you know, where they're willing to negotiate. You know, when you go to buy a car, you know what their bottom line is, you know what your bottom line is. And now finally they've shown some cards here. Will the players react positively to the Jack Bauer ticking time clock here?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I believe the 82 game season business is like an episode of 24 now. So the heat is on the players. And they have turned around and put it all on the players now, basically. So if the players reject this and the lockout continues, their take on this now, it's pretty smart, actually, from a public relations standpoint, to go, well, we tried, fans. We tried.
Right.
We acted in good faith. And they rejected it. So the whole offer is gone. We've pulled. It's like watching an episode of Shark Tank with Mark Cuban. Have you ever watched that show?
I saw some of it once.
He always makes an offer to these small business owners. He's like, 24-second shot clock, I'll give you $50,000 for 80% of your company. Make a decision. You know, and they like are like crapping themselves, you
right,
know.
Right.
Oh, we'll take it. So I'm concerned about that, dude. You seem to be a little more upbeat.
Well, also, I was thinking of the other big NHL news that happened. I mean, we get two news stories in 1 week. It's crazy. The whole scandal that was broken or reported by Gawker. I mean, you've heard about this, right? A couple of days ago that it was leaked that the NHL was spending tens of thousands of dollars on a focus group in the greater DC area, which was put on by Frank Luntz, who is a Republican strategist and writer of a book called Words Matter, and famously, you know, called the estate tax the death tax and all these kinds of things, right? And so basically they were trying to do market research in order to find messaging to make the NHL look better in this negotiation. And it was a pretty big firestorm when this news came to light that, you know, the NHL is paying all this money to basically find a way to convince people, trick people into thinking that the NHL is really the good guy here. Certainly, public relations seemed to be that the tide of the public was that they were not particularly sympathetic to the owners. And so now they're trying to figure out a way to weasel out of that position and convince people that they're, in fact, on the side of goodness and light. And maybe this is a bit of a reaction to that. It's like, crap, you know, we're going to look even worse. You know, and people are making tons of jokes like, now the NHL needs to do a focus group on how to recover from the last focus group, you know, stuff like that. You know, lots of fun jokes were to be had by all. So one way of looking at it is that maybe the NHL is like, man, we're really looking terrible in this deal. So one way to rehabilitate that image, which is now getting worse, is to actually put a deal that isn't just laughable on its face. And like you said, the fact that it does have this 24 ticking time bomb is a pretty good negotiating ploy by the NHL, because when fans inevitably get pissed if more games are lost, the NHL can point directly to the players and say they did this. Mm-hmm. So posturing, you know, brinksmanship aside, from what you've seen so far, is this a good deal? Is this a deal that you think the players should take? We're not accountants here. We're not lawyers for the Players Association or for the league. But in terms of, you know, the numbers being thrown around and everything's going on, do you think this is something that actually could happen?
It's so hard to tell because we haven't seen like all the details here. The 50-50 split. I mean, that's 50-50. I mean, that sounds fair to me. I mean, you know, I mean, isn't 50-50 fair? I mean, you're putting that on the table, dude. I mean, isn't that fair?
Even though the players play all the games and take all the physical risk?
Well, but...
I mean, of course, 50-50 is inherently fair, but I mean, couldn't you say that...
Sure, but there'd be no NHL without these owners. I mean, like, that has to be taken into account.
There'd be a WHA.
Well, then those greedy bastards would do the same thing to them.
Probably.
So, you know, I understand that the owners feel entitled to 50%. Like, I understand that. I think 50-50 to me, at least as an offer, sounds fair. It's not insulting. I mean, wasn't it like 57, like 43 was their last offer or something crazy like that?
They wanted to go all the way down to 47, I think.
So 53-47 in favor of the owners?
Right.
Right. I mean, that's definitely not fair, you know? Mm-hmm. I felt like the best explanation of some of the details was on ESPN with Pierre LeBrun. Entry-level deal would go from 3 years to 2 years, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. Maximum length of contract would be 5 years, and free agency would go to 8 years in the league or 28.
Okay. So that's a concession. Right. That would be a concession by the players, because right now it's 7 years.
What they're trying to do is limit that second contracts so that the second contracts are getting out of control. Like we're seeing, you know, mm-hmm. like players like Tyler Seguin and Taylor Hall making... Or Tyler Myers, you know, making mm-hmm. $6 million when they've only played in the league for 2 years.
Right.
And I think they're trying to control that a little bit. I understand. That doesn't seem unreasonable to me. I mean, I've always kind of felt like, you know, in some of these sports that some of these younger players get, you know, paid outrageously way too soon, you know, the NBA and, you know, probably the worst, the NFL with their signing bonuses.
Right.
Where these guys, you know, like Sam Bradford's quarterback of the Rams, he sucks. He's terrible. He's done nothing. You know, he's a joke, and he's making, you know, got like a $30 million signing bonus or something for nothing. So mm-hmm. I feel like that makes sense to me. The interesting thing that's really going to hurt the Sharks in this is with the revenue thing going to 50-50, you know, for a year you can spend up to $70 million, but then the cap is going to come down.
Like a freaking anvil.
And, you know, without penalty for a year, you can figure it out, but the Sharks are going to have to do some fancy dancing to get out from under a few of these contracts.
Well, they're not the only ones, and the Sharks actually are probably in a better position than a lot of teams.
I guess so, although some teams might have some players under contract that maybe are a little younger and in maybe the prime of their career that might be able to be moved for some younger players. Whereas, you know, I mean, this is an opportunity that you used to see maybe Doug Wilson like poaching mm-hmm. like a hawk. And now I fear the Sharks are going to be the ones giving away some assets because they're just going to have to clear salary at some point. And there's going to be several teams in that boat. It'll be interesting to see how those kind of details iron out. So, dude,
it's encouraging.
It's encouraging.
I'm encouraged by this. And one thing that I thought was a good thing that especially seemed to be particularly hypocritical was to have guys like, you know, the owner or the GM of the Minnesota Wild complain about these contracts and how terrible they were. And then they go sign two guys to $100 million deals over 13 years. And one of the things is that one, you know, basically it's going to punish the owners, you know, sort of the Wade Redden clause, which is if you stash a guy in the AHL, you're still on the hook for that money, which I think is probably a good thing.
And that won't happen. I mean, that's not going to happen now.
And two, I think it's a good thing if that there is no salary rollback, because I know that would stick, that I can imagine that would stick in the craw of a lot of people. You sign this deal, you're a young player, you're a good hockey player, you sign this deal literally, in some cases, weeks before the owners are then in turn asking for a pay cut. You know, the first deal was asking for another 20 to 25% pay cut just off the top. Okay, every contract you're making, you're taking a 25% pay cut. And I think that that offends people, that offends me. And this new proposal doesn't include that. Okay, not everybody just has to automatically take a haircut because we want you to. You know, owners and GMs are going to have to feel some pain and find a way to work around some of these contracts. And to me, that feels right. That feels like, okay, we're taking a little bit of ownership that we put ourselves in this position, and we're going to have to be in an awkward situation to try to get ourselves out of it. If everybody just takes a pay cut, then the teams face no awkwardness. It's like, okay, everybody just takes less, and and we just make more money. The end.
So if the salary cap is $70 million in 2013-14, like how far do you think it would drop?
Well, I mean, 64%, you say 12%. Well, what's it? What was it last year? 64.
I don't remember. Dude.
So let's say 64 or 65. So 12% of 65 is what, 8 million. So you're talking, let's say 60, and just to give it an extra haircut. So you got to trim $10 million.
So it would be 12% off of the previous year's cap or not? What about
It would be 12%. Off of, but if there's growth, then it will be less, right? So if the league grows, then it's 12, you know, you're taking 50% of the new growing number. It would probably be, I would guess, somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 to $10 million.
And everybody just turned off the podcast. All right.
Hey, you're asking the math questions, brother.
I know. I regretted it as soon as I asked it. I was like, oh, numbers.
I was actually a little shocked that you asked that.
Well, I guess I'm trying to figure out, as I look at, you know, all these teams that are over $60 million, it's almost half the teams in the NHL that are over $60 million. So I have two questions for you, okay? If this does happen, what happens to these players? Like, there's going to be limited teams that are going to be able to take them on, and some of them just don't have the financial ability to do this. Like,
right.
they cannot take on. You're not going to see Nashville all of a sudden, you know, taking on, you know, huge contracts.
Right.
They just aren't able to do it, and they're
Jeff
not.
Jeff Finger, come on down.
So, you know, you look at teams that are going to be in trouble, you know, at the top is, you know, the Minnesota Wild are going to be looking to move Danny Heatley like nobody's business, and no one's going to take him. So then what happens? That you end up having to buy him out?
That's a big thing. Clearly, there's going to have to be some sort of provision for teams to get out from under, because just like you said, there's going to be a lot of teams in this predicament.
There's going to have to be an amnesty.
There's going to have to be an amnesty. There's going to have to be a more charitable buyout situation. You can buy out more players and it's better on the team. Something along those lines. There's going to have to be something.
My second question to you is, we've already seen a major league squeeze on, as we're talking through the debate tonight, the middle class of the NHL, okay?
Yeah.
These guys, the Brad Winchesters of the NHL, the Dominic Moores, who struggle to find employment year after year, with the cap going down to 60 with already a bunch of big contracts floating around out there and teams under the squeeze, what's going to happen to those guys? Are they going to not have jobs in the NHL now? These guys, so many of those players still unsigned, you know, floating around out there, the Arnotts, the, you know, the Moores, those kind of players, what happens to them?
I think in the short term, they get squeezed. I think in the short term, they're going to have to get squeezed out, and teams are going to want to go with young blood. They're going to want to go with guys making on their entry-level deals, making close to league minimum, and they're going to try to fill some of those roles because they are going to be stuck with some of these larger contracts. And then maybe in the next 3 to 5 years, I think we'll see those kinds of players come back because I think they are valuable in the league. Teams obviously do want to pay Manny Malhotra $2.5 million. The Sharks maybe didn't want to pay him that much, but they probably would have paid him $2 million or a little bit less, and this is a guy that scores usually less than 20 points per year. So I think these players are still going to be sought after. It's just because of financial considerations, there's going to be a reckoning. And those players are going to be the ones that probably are going to get shot first. But I think they're going to have to come back because everybody can use a good penalty killer, right? And teams, you see a team like the Sharks and their penalty kill is terrible. And what do they want to do? They want to improve the penalty kill. And that's not going to change. And you're not going to go out and try to improve the penalty kill by getting Danny Heatley in a trade.
So has a team like the Minnesota Wild essentially screwed themselves?
Yes, which is awesome.
So they have screwed themselves by committing $21 million to three players, basically a third of what could be their potential cap situation. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a major problem then.
Yeah.
A huge problem coming up, you know, where, you know, yeah, they have some good young talent, you know, we know this, but still, I mean, you're going to be missing those role players. I fear for that part of the game, you know, that there's going to be these guys who are in their mid 30s, you know, the Colin Whites and the Vandermeers of the world. Now, maybe those guys don't deserve to be in the league anymore based on talent.
Well,
but some of them do, you know, some of them do. And like a Jason Arnott still has something to offer somebody, but he's not going to do it for 500 grand.
Right. But like I said, I think there's going to be a difference. You're going to see a difference in a few years between a Jason Arnott type player and a Brandon Mashinter.
Right.
Teams will recognize, and the salaries will reflect it at some point, that Jason Arnott for 1 year is worth more than Brandon Mashinter. And so maybe not next year, right? Because these guys are all going to have to adjust. And, you know, I think that's going to suck for those players. And some of those guys are going to get squeezed and they're going to be forced basically into retirement early. But you know what? I don't feel so bad about Minnesota. Like, you want to sign two guys to 13-year deals? Guess what happens? It's a risky situation. And now you've lost a lot of that flexibility. And, now you're in a tough spot. Yeah, no one saw that coming, right? So I think it's only fair that those guys face a difficult situation and have to make some tough choices. Okay, right. Yeah, I want Ryan Whitney, or not Ryan Whitney, I want Zach Parise, and I want Suter, but I'm paying them so much, now I can't fill out the rest of my team. Okay, that's a strategy of filling out a team. You go with three stars and a bunch of nobodies. Could work. Yeah. If it doesn't, guess what? You're pretty well screwed.
So in 2013-14, the Sharks have 14 roster players signed at a cap hit of $54 million. So, you know, they actually maybe aren't in too bad of a spot. When you look at the guys they don't have, Grice, who cares? Murray, hate to say it, doesn't really matter.
Becoming less of an integral part of the Sharks.
Demers, restricted.
Mm-hmm.
Desjardins, restricted. Wouldn't be that expensive anyways. Gagliardi, we don't know. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe he'd be back. Maybe he wouldn't. Hanzus, I'll help you pack. All right. And Ryan Klo, I mean, Ryan Klo could end up being the casualty on the Sharks of this new deal. Because, you know, no one's going to take Havlat at five at this point. Like, that's a dead contract,
mm-hmm.
unless he's your amnesty.
Right.
You know? So I don't want to get too far ahead of it because we don't know the ins and outs, but it is encouraging, dude. I will flip the switch to be a lemonade half full.
Good. I'm just excited to see hockey because we saw some hockey last weekend.
We did.
We saw the San Francisco Bulls play. We had a great turnout.
We got jerseys.
Yeah, we got jerseys.
They were out of the orange jerseys when we got there.
Game two, they're out of the orange jerseys.
Yeah.
I might revisit the whole logistics chain of merchandise production because I honestly can't imagine how many thousands of dollars they probably lost the night we were there, because there were a lot of people asking about orange jerseys, which is the home jersey.
Right.
And they basically sold out of our size, you know, a size large, which is the size that probably, you know, most grown men would fit into or want to fit into. And they were out of the orange large. And so we ended up getting white jerseys because we were just so hell bent on having a jersey. And I'm happy with my purchase, but not the best start for the merchandising facility of the San Francisco Bulls. That being said, the game was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it was great to see those players. It's a fun place to be. I enjoyed the Cow Palace. You know, got a hot dog, tasted fine. You know, it was okay. You know, it really was, and it had that minor league feel, which
sure,
I like.
I had a good time, and I think that the fans who were there sitting in our section, you know, listeners of Dudes on Hockey, had a good time. We had a lively section. Sitting behind us were the Hans Benson groupies, you know, cheering for Hans Benson in all 4 minutes of ice time he had or whatever he played. I mean, he didn't play very much. But we met some cool people that night. It was really cool. And we got a lot of emails and comments afterwards saying, let's do this again. You know, let's make it happen. Whether the Sharks are playing or not, there was a lot of vocal animosity against the NHL from some of our listeners saying that even when the Sharks come back, they're not coming back.
Right.
They don't want to come back and they've had enough. And now that the Bulls are here, they're going to watch the Bulls. Hey, I say, if you like defense, you're going to love the Bulls.
Because, 6-5.
That is a falsity.
Yeah.
The defense was wretched, you know, really, really bad, except for, ironically, when they had a 5-minute major penalty kill, and actually two of it was a 5-on-3, and they were masterful.
And they killed it.
They killed it. But
and the rest of the game was like cheesecloth. It was just like pucks everywhere.
It was pretty bad on both sides, and, you know, not outstanding goaltending either. I was kind of on Heemskerk for having bad numbers in the ECHL last year, and I kind of see maybe why the defense is not great. But hey, the Bulls can score, and they are an aggressive team, looking to score, driving to the net, and it was fun.
Yeah.
And we had good seats for $22.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really good seats. And I would definitely go back.
I would definitely go back. I was looking at the schedule like the very next day. I loaded up my computer. I was looking to see. There's a Stockton Thunder game in January I sort of had my eye on.
Ooh.
And we talked about going to the Alaska Aces.
Yes, Scott Gomez.
Actually, he's not playing for them.
Oh.
He's just working out with them. Yeah, I checked the Alaska Aces website. He just basically signed like a tryout contract just so he could have permission to work out.
Oh, that's lame.
But you know who is on the Alaska Aces?
Oh, it's William Wren.
And there's others. Yeah, William Wren is good. But there's two other players that you've probably heard of. One is Joey Crabb, who's a sort of a lesser player. I think he played like third or fourth line. But Brandon Dubinsky's on the Alaska Aces.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's really flown under the radar.
Yeah, I know. I was looking at the roster. I'm like, Brandon Dubinsky? What?
Oh, wow.
Because he's on Columbus now. So maybe that's why it's not like a huge thing, because nobody cares about Columbus.
I thought they made such a big deal about Gomez playing, and they've seen all these articles about Kyle Quincy playing for the CHL,
right,
for Colorado, the Cutthroats. So Dubinsky in the ECHL, that's grossly unfair. He doesn't have 80 points.
I think he's from Alaska.
He can play. I thought it, you know, someone like Dan Boyle, like, why don't you play for the Bulls? You know, just play, or even just play in the home games, you know, play in the home games. I'm going to play in the home games. And I thought it was interesting, like the Kyle Quincy thing, that the coach is, Derek Armstrong, you know, former NHL player. I said Derek Armstrong.
Huh?
Yeah. Yes. Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yes.
Okay.
And He said, yeah, I don't know if Kyle's going to be playing the PK. I don't know if he's going to want to block any shots. But he's going to be on the power play, and he's going to play even strength. Might not hit anybody. And if you go towards him, he might just ole you. But he's like, I got a real career. Go around me.
Yeah, exactly. After you. Yeah.
So why not? I saw Joe Pavelski's playing in the KHL. Like, I wouldn't want to go over there if I was those guys. Like, I don't know. That's That's a far,
especially after
cold,
the whole plane crash thing.
Yeah,
man.
No, thank you. Like I would pass.
We did get an email from Oleg about the ECHL. He said, "So my friends and I went to the Bulls game on Saturday, quite enjoyed it, even though it was not the NHL. After the game, I looked into how much these guys make and basically found it was nothing. Not sure if the dudes can answer this, but how do these ECHL players live?" Well, I looked it up. You know what? They have a salary cap in the ECHL.
Yeah, isn't it like $5,000?
It's $12,000 a week. So if you, the average, that means the average salary, you know, assuming a 22-man roster is like $590 a week.
Right.
Which works out to about a $30,000 a year living.
Now, I believe these players get per diem.
They
do. When they're on the road, so they would get money.
And travel expenses.
And travel expenses. And dude, do you know if they get housing?
I looked into that. I couldn't find anything that said specifically they get housing. In one article I found, it sort of referenced that, but I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, I've got to think that they do, because if you're a player for the San Francisco Bulls,
yeah, you're getting screwed.
Where are you going to live? Like
Martinez.
It'd be pretty hard to live in the Bay Area, and then why the hell would you come to the Bay Area when you could play in Idaho and probably have a mansion for $590 a week?
Yeah, you could play.
Like, you know, because so many of the other cities are not in a, you know, top 10 U.S. city,
right?
You know, and definitely one of the most expensive places to live in the United States. Like, why would you ever want to come here? I mean, other than just the exoticness of playing in the Bay Area, but so expensive for that amount of money. I've got to think that housing's got to be involved.
There's got to be. Yeah, it seems like, because, you know, $30,000, maybe in some places you could squeak out a living. But I mean, that will barely cover the rent here. I mean, you got to have like four roommates and all this kind of stuff.
And maybe they do. Maybe they live in a van down by the river.
They could.
I'll tell you the one negative about going to the Bulls game, right? This is the only negative comment I have. Getting to and getting out of the Cal Palace sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks. It's terrible.
It's really not that near a freeway,
no,
so it's kind of a pain.
It's really, really awful. And we got out pretty quickly for what I expected. Like, I thought we were going to be kind of trapped in there for a while. And I mean, you took the route towards 280, and we came in 101, and that's a... It's kind of around, like, you end up like in the middle of the, like in the city,
in the middle
like,
of Brisbane,
and then you're like backing out, like backtracking. Yeah, that sucked. I mean, that would be the only thing that would keep me from going. But really, going to any sporting event in San Francisco is as inconvenient. Going to Candlestick, driving to Candlestick, that's terrible too.
Yeah.
And trying to get to a Giants game, especially during the playoffs when parking is probably $100, you know, they jack it up, is inconvenient as
Anything else about the night, Saturday night, that you would change, dude? Anything good, bad?
Yeah, I think we should add name tags.
See?
No, dude, I don't think I would have changed anything. The Molson was cold.
Yep.
And
you hate Molson.
I do, but it was cold. I had a Bud Light. It was better.
Yeah.
It was better. It was American.
That's sad.
Or it was American. We did try to go to this dive bar that has a great reputation for food called the Broken Record.
Mm-hmm.
We did go and have a beverage and ran into some friends there actually just by chance who were going to the game as well. And we weren't able to have any of the food. The line was just outrageous. So we'll have to plan better next time. Would you change anything, dude?
No, it might be nice. Actually, next time I may try to organize a little bit of a meetup, because I felt like I got to meet some of the people that came, but not everybody.
Right.
And because no one had name tags, I didn't know who they were. No. But it would have been nice to have sort of, you know, a small period of time for people to sort of chat. Because, you know, in the period breaks, people go to the bathroom or they get food or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, some people get to the game late. And so you never really have a chance to sort of hang out with the people that came along. So it was cool. I'm sure, you know, like I said, you know, lots of people responded and said they had a great time and they would do it again. So, you know, I'm not looking for like, you know, like a... you know, like a campfire circle where we all sing songs or nothing, but it might be cool to hang out with some of the listeners a little bit more than we did. Maybe next time I'll have a small add-on before a place we can meet up before the game if people want to do that. Obviously, if they don't, they can just, you know, show up. But otherwise, I think it went really smooth, so I was pretty stoked with the way it went. The only other thing is Dudes on Hockey didn't make it on the scoreboard, which I was a little pissed about.
Yeah, they said your name.
It had my name, which was lame. I emailed the guy too late, and we had talked about it earlier, but that never really got closed. So next time, I'm going to be on it, and I'm really going to demand that Dudes on Hockey gets on.
He must have been so busy ordering more orange jerseys. He
maybe.
Wasn't able to make
or maybe
it
he
happen.
Was sewing them himself in the back. Oh, geez. You know, so getting the stitching on and stuff.
It really had that minor league feel to it, with like the fire on the ice, like the really kind of cheap like fire cannon, and then like the sparklers like going off like at the end.
Yeah.
And I did like the Christopher Walken, we need more cowbell.
Right.
You know, I mean, everybody, it wasn't nearly as annoying as I thought it was going to be, actually, the cowbells.
The first,
I thought
like,
were
five,
used appropriately.
The first 5 minutes we were in the arena, we were around this huge group of young kids, and they all just shook the cowbell nonstop for the first 5 minutes. And that's when we were going through the jersey situation. And I was thinking to myself at that point, I'm like, I'm going to kill somebody if this continues. But it did, you know, definitely calm down because we didn't sit next to that huge group.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was used appropriately. And I still have my cowbell. And you lost yours.
I did. It got poached, I believe, by the person next to me.
So, dude, well, I guess next week we might have some really good news. We might be even talking about a new opening day for the NHL.
We might, you know, I'm really looking forward to the season starting because I can't wait to see the mediocrity of the players from Worcester coming up and contributing this year, as the Worcester Sharks are off to an 0-1-1 start, dude, and profiled by ESPN as the 27th out of 30 teams in the AHL. They didn't have a lot of nice things to say about them. Mostly discouraging things from the first couple games, except for James Shepherd has 3 points. Maybe that's encouraging. You know, you want to see a guy like that have strong numbers. But, you know, probably the worst thing is when you look at the numbers and go, you know, Nick Petrecki again, you know, -4, you know, in the first two games. You just go, man, you know, this guy, you know, I know we had such high hopes for him in that initial impression he made at the teal and white game when he at the shootout just kind of like took three strides in and like blasted one, and we're like, yes, Chris Pronger, you know, like we just thought we had finally this like big tough and mean defenseman and who had some offensive skill, and it just has not quite materialized. So interestingly, Danny Grew has not played yet. I don't know if he's hurt or I doubt they have him sitting out intentionally, but yeah, not a lot of positive things to say.
The good news is that when all of those good players come back to the NHL, Worcester will be better by comparison.
that's true, I guess. You know, probably not a lot of the players from Worcester are going to be playing on the Sharks, but I just kind of look at that roster, and I was looking at the first two box scores, and I, you know, you hear names like Mashinger and McCarthy about guys who might be playing on the Sharks this year, and you know, if they're going to contribute at the NHL level, they sure aren't contributing at the AHL level, like, really very consistently. And you want to see guys like that, like, be standouts, you know?
Yeah.
And they're not.
Right.
So
it's unfortunate.
I know it's only two games in, you know?
Yeah.
You know, shut up, Doug.
But a little too early.
But we got to have a little something to talk about.
Yeah, and we do. Thank God for the new stories. Otherwise, you know, this week had been really dead. So hopefully next week we'll have some more news. Certainly we'll, I know we'll have at least a response by the players, or we'll have at least an idea of what the response will be. You know, best case, we might be planning for the beginning of the season. Worst case, we might be planning for another outing to the Bulls.
Hey, well, there'll be something happening.
Yeah.
Because there's no lockout at Dudes on Hockey.
That's right. We're still here, and we'll be here regardless of the breakdown, 50% or whatever, 60-40, 70-30, doesn't matter.
I'd like to propose a revenue sharing with you, dude.
Okay, how much are we splitting?
We're going to split it evenly.
Okay.
70-30.
Perfect. Okay, we have $0 in revenue, so we each get zero.
Okay.
Done.
I will take my 70% of nothing and run for the hills.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air?
Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.